It was Arnold, the town clerk, well, part-time when he can fit it in, who told me about this real ale they've put on down at the Dog and Pullet. He'd gone deaf in one ear and he couldn't work out which one it was. Somebody told him to stick his head underwater in the bath and see which one the bubbles came out of. Well, he couldn't see anything with his head underwater, so he called his missus in to watch. But she got hysterical and pulled the plug out. Real ale. I couldn't help wondering what they've been giving me all these years. Arnold said you can't drink so much of it, so I don't think it can be an improvement. Charlie Bates went in for brewing his own when it got to 50 pence a pint. He bottled it up and kept it outside in his chicken coop. One night the bottles started blowing, and that set the chickens off, and his mother-in-law, who had come to stay while her place was being fumigated against Death Watch Beetle, screamed blue murder about being ambushed by Red Indians. Mind you, Charlie did us a good turn when he brought a couple of his bottles to the cricket match. It's the Dog and Pullet Irregulars versus the St John's Ambulance. We have it every year to raise money for the village hall. The hall blew up a few years back in mysterious circumstances. Rita, my wife, you know, her name is Alice, but I don't want to go into that. She said it was something to do with North Sea gas and swore she smelt something fishy up there the last time she went to Bingo. Anyhow, ever since then we've been trying to raise the money for a new hall. Old Fred Binns, the treasurer, just snuffed it without a word of warning and we discovered he'd let the insurance lapse. So that's why we started the cricket match and, oh, I knew I'd get round to it. That's why Charlie's home brew came in handy when the St John's people put on this beefy fast bowler. He was a heavy goods driver and his wife had just run off with a banjo player in one of those jazz bands. Well, he wasn't in a good mood. The heavy goods driver, I mean, not the banjo player. I don't know how he got on, but in any case he asked for it. He threw the ball down at our chaps as though he hated the sight of them. It got so bad that the next man in wouldn't come out. He caused so many casualties in his first spell that the rumour went round that the St John's Ambulance people had brought him in so that they could try out their first aid. During the second cloudburst, Charlie slipped the bowler a pint of his special. He hit the pavilion clock with his next delivery and they took him off. After the match, Arnold called a quick meeting and said that the village hall had become a liability. We hadn't enough in hand to pay the auditors to do the books and the bank charges were not running in our favour. Arnold said that if there had been a village hall, we would have had to have had it pulled down to pay the rates and then sell off the land to pay for the upkeep. Arnold gets a bit technical when he's on this real ale. Arnold pointed out that we couldn't even offer the hall a security as it wasn't actually there, and working this out seemed to sober everybody up. Then someone said it was a load of hot air and the idea of the hot air balloon was suddenly, well, in the air. I seem to remember, though it's all pretty vague, but there was this chap with a ginger wig that had slipped over one of his ears. He was holding on to the bar and he seemed to know all about these hot air balloons. He said there were competitions to see how far someone could get in one of these contraptions. There was sponsorship, he said. The further you went, the more you got. Then we got bogged down working out how much at 20p a mile if you got to China. Somebody organised a quick draw with beer mats and Arnold and Charlie Bates were chosen as our team. Charlie climbed onto the bar and started flapping his arms and squawking like a chicken. At the time, I couldn't see the connection. To tell you the truth, I still can't see the connection. After we got outside, a couple of the lads started running along the road, making a noise like an aeroplane. Then they picked Charlie up and threw him over a hedge and I could see that the hot air balloon idea had caught on. It was weeks before the matter came up again. Then one Friday night after the mixed doubles darts final, it all flared up. Before the session was over, we'd formed a committee to go over and take a look at this balloon thing, and Charlie got up onto the bar again, flapping and squawking, which ended a jolly evening in utter chaos. I must say I was surprised when they turned up on the Sunday morning. There was Stan Roberts with his car, and Charlie and Arnold were in the back seat. It transpired later that Stan had lured them, so to speak, with the idea of running out to this pub that had once been a windmill, and they hadn't realised that this was where the balloon was being kept. The chap who had the thing had been in the Air Force, and you could tell that he'd never got over it. He was called Nigel. He had a big moustache right round to his ears, and he shouted all the time as though we were all stone deaf. He had the balloon in a barn, and after we'd oiled the wheels a bit and Charlie had bowled a few bottles up the skittle alley, we all trooped over to have a look at it. It was all over the floor in great folds, and Charlie asked the chap if it had got a puncture, and he said if we'd give him a hand to get it out into the open, we'd be able to see what we were up against. So we dragged the thing outside and it flapped a bit, and this Air Force chap started shouting instructions just as though we were in his platoon. There was a radio mic which went with it where the people in the balloon could talk to people on the ground, and we had a bit of fun with that, especially Charlie. And this chap set off one of the canisters that filled the balloon with hot air, and the thing blew up to enormous proportions. Charlie and Arnold got into the basket to keep the weight down, and Stan and this Nigel chap held on to the ropes. I would have helped if this Nigel hadn't shouted at me, "He'll have me saluting next," I thought. In any case, it wasn't my idea, and as far as I can remember, I voted against it. Well, it had been calm enough all the way over, but suddenly there was a terrific gust of wind, and somehow the thing seemed to get out of control. Stan Roberts was lifted clean off the ground before he let go, which left Nigel dragging along the ground until he hit a tree. Charlie and Arnold were shouting like crazy men, but after a while they got fainter and fainter. It was a good job we had the radio fixed, because Arnold went into a panic pretty quickly, and Charlie making a noise like he was laying an egg didn't help. As I told them, some of those astronauts go up for miles and stay up for months on end. Man, I said, has conquered space, and in any case, a big thing like a balloon could easily be shot down if it came to it. Fortunately, the ground-to-air radio worked perfectly, although it did get a bit trying when Charlie insisted on dictating his will. But I was able to plug them into the news and an interesting talk about shrews. Shrews, oh, they're little things about the size of mice with long noses. They look a bit like miniature warthogs. Well, apparently they consume fat at an alarming rate. In fact, they have to eat something every 20 minutes, otherwise they stop dead in their tracks. As I said to Arnold, there's everybody watching what they eat and running round the park, and these cunning little blighters have got the secret of weight control. If only we could discover what it was, we could all drink up and lay in bed all day eating pork pies. I must say that Arnold didn't seem very interested in all this. He said they were just drifting over Greece. I told him they weren't even going in the right direction for Greece. When they reached the coast, they would be going out over the North Sea. The first bit of land they would see would be New York, providing they missed Ireland. Greece. He's got no sense of direction, hasn't Arnold? He kept on about hearing this Greek music, and then I twigged it. They were just above the Taverna Cafe, where they have the Turkish belly dancers in Sunday lunchtime, which was all Greek to Arnold. They say that just watching them does the world for the digestion. Then Nigel started picking a quarrel with me about not holding onto the rope. I told him I'd only come as an observer. In any case, he ought to have some control over the thing, letting it off like that. If he couldn't get it down, he'd no right to advertise the thing as a going concern. Stan went into the house and made Nigel a cup of tea to steady his nerves. When he calmed down, he said that the balloon was bound to come down when the hot air evaporated. "Well, that's all very well," I said, "but where? Someone had to make arrangements. There'll be splints and sticking plaster needed and stretchers as well. He had a quick workout and said that depending on the air currents, it could be Margate or Harrogate. Then he went to call the police, as a big thing like that landing in a public place was bound to attract a crowd. Well, this was when things started to get hectic. A policeman arrived and said that their car radios were jammed by some idiot singing hymns. "That'll be Charlie," I said. "Look," I said, handing him the microphone, "I'm washing my hands of it. You'd better talk to him. He never takes any notice of anything I say." Of course, then the whole story came out. The policeman took the names of the next of kin and drove off. Hardly before I had time to drink my tea, Charlie's wife, Reenie, was banging me with her umbrella. The time, she said, she wants to get rid of him, but when the chance came, she turned silly. "Look," I said, "he's going to be all right. He'll be down before dark." "I know," she said, and hit me again. Then Arnold's wife, Clara, appeared. Trust her not to be left out of anything. "What's he doing it for?" she said. "We may have had a few words, but he knows I don't mean it." "It's for the village hall," I said. "But there is no village hall," she said. She acts posh as Clara, but her grammar is awful. She went all fur coat when Arnold got made town clerk part-time. But I remember her when she used to serve in the chip shop and she... Well, never mind that. "There is no village hall," she said, getting all hot and bothered. "I know that," I said. "That's the point of it all. We're trying to raise the money to get one." "But why Arnold?" she said. "Why didn't you go up?" "Because I wasn't picked," I said. "It was all perfectly fair. I might have been picked as well as him. It was all above board, mind you. If I had been picked, I would have resigned. But Arnold, being a big man in the town, he has to get in the front of everything." "Now, don't worry," I said, trying to be sympathetic. "They're only going to Margate." "Margate," she said. "Why Margate? He's got a sister in Ramsgate." "Well, it may not be Margate," I said. "It may be Harrogate. They haven't planned the route out yet." "If he doesn't come down, he needn't come back home," Clara said. Which is a bit of a conundrum, really, but people do say funny things when they're all worked up. And then, wouldn't you know it, the balloon gradually came into view. It dipped down over the trees and started to come towards where we were standing. The balloon got so close that we could see Arnold's white face. We couldn't see Charlie because he was on his knees praying. Reenie started crying and Clara shouted, "I've got nothing in for tea," before the thing lifted again and flew off towards the windmill. "Grab the rope," Nigel shouted. But we were all so busy watching that nobody moved a muscle. Well, the damn thing seemed to have a will of its own. It kept dropping down and then lifting off again. Sometimes it got so low that Arnold and Charlie could have jumped out, but they seemed to have lost their nerve. It was still coming in about 2 hours later. It was getting cold when it finally landed, and I was glad I hadn't brought a coat, you see. Charlie and Arnold looked quite dazed. Arnold didn't say a word, but Charlie said that the experience had changed him. Arnold was going to give up the beer and stay at home more, at which point Reenie fetched him a fearful clout with her umbrella, and after that he was all right again.
And tomorrow...